This episode is brought to you by HighSpots.com. HighSpots.com is the leading provider of professional wrestling and mixed martial arts merchandise. From wrestling boots to wrestling DVDs, wrestling action figures to title belts, HighSpots.com has the largest selection of wrestling merchandise. Go there right now with our link, tinyurl.com/STS HighSpots. STSHIGHSPOTS. Shop there with that link. It won't cost you any extra, but it will help support this podcast.
Episode 71 with Steve Beverly from Matt Watch. How about episode 79 with Jeff Zinger from GAG? It's kind of prelude to what we're doing for March. This month we're going to have the Let's Talk Shiznit on the Dirt Sheets series. That's right. So our first guest is JD McKay, but here's a clip from the Steve Beverly Show.
I made a decision to plunge into this right around the time when they had that, what now is a legendary Sunday night card at the Omni, in which Turner executives were there in the luxury box with people from Jim Crockett Promotions. And that's where really the decision was made to go forward, and that Turner was going to take over controlling interest in the company. And those are the kind of things that I had a personal interest in, particularly from the broadcasting side of it, because I was aware that it really became very, very evident that the traditional promoters who were trying to go national to compete with Vince McMahon did not have the dollars to do that. And so it was going to take the money of a major broadcaster and a major player in the game, if anybody was going to at least make a strike at that. So when that happened, I said, well, okay, I'm going to try doing a newsletter and just see how it works and go from there. And so for 4 years, I did it. But as I say, one of the major reasons for giving it up after 4 years was, I can tell you, when you have an experience with something like depression.
We discussed a very. I have an episode where we were discussing it, and I have shared a little.
Hey, welcome to a new episode of Shooting a Shiznit. Let's get some business out of the way, and then we'll get to the episode. A special thanks to Bob McGee at Pro Wrestling's Between the Sheets. That's www.pwbts.com. Locals2legends.com. That's old Gene Jackson. Sean Garmer at w2mnet.com. We thank you guys for spreading the word. You can get all the episodes at www.stspod.club, all the whole archives. tinyurl.com/stspodmerch. You can get t-shirts, mugs, a little bit of everything. You can always send us a little donation at Brian_Trammell, T-R-A-M-E-L, at yahoo.com. That's my PayPal address. Guys, you can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, and Pod Paradise, and Spreaker. That's right. I'm at Comic Book Mark BT on Twitter, at BT Shooting a Shiznit on Instagram. We also have a Shooting the Shiznit Facebook group or page there where I put all the episodes. We also have the Cool Kids Wrestling and MMA Talk Facebook group. That's where we talk about wrestling. You have to ask to come in, and if we don't like you, we'll kick you out. A big shout out to my buddy Suplex City Limits. This is all my podcast bros. Creative Control with JoJo, Who's Right Podcast, that's a non-wrestling podcast, and my buddies over there at P3 Radio. Also, a special shout out to Keeping It 100 Patreon site. Guys, it's only $1 to join. You get extra things, and for just $1, it helps out the show. Keeping It 100 is my favorite podcast, well, other than mine, when it comes to wrestling podcasts. Hey, guys, let's quit talking.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Let's start the party.
Episode 95. That's right, episode 95. Bringing him from the green room, my old buddy, JD McKay. How's it going, JD?
Man, it's going great, BT. It's great, great, great to be here with you, and I'm glad to get out of the green room.
Well, I usually have milk and cookies in there. Did they not have the milk and cookies?
Well, they had some brownies that were pretty interesting. I know that much. But anyway.
Yeah, I had a couple of people on here. I have to tell them, you know, the special stash is under the couch. So we're going to talk to you. This is a special series, about four or five episodes we're going to do. Let's Talk Shiznit on the Dirt Sheet series. And you had a dirt sheet. So what we're going to do first, though, JD, is I'm just going to talk how you become a wrestling fan and all of that first, and then we'll go into how you started Ringside Reflector there.
All right. Me becoming a wrestling fan was mainly my dad's fault. Dad was a big wrestling fan. Kept me up late at night on Saturday nights to watch Mississippi Gulf Coast Championship Wrestling, Cowboy Bob Kelly, Frank Dalton, Armand Hussein, the Gibson brothers, Ricky Gibson, Ken Lucas, the whole bunch down there. You know, that was where it really got started. I was like 4, 5, 6 years old. And from there, brother, I started watching Lawler, Dundee, Mantell, Gilbert, Austin Idol, Memphis, Mid-South came next, and then Continental. And I just couldn't get enough. I just had to watch everything I could get my hands on. By the time I got to about 15 to 18, I was watching probably 8 to 10 hours of wrestling every Saturday, it seemed like.
Wow.
I was out here in wrestling heaven in Mississippi.
Right.
Yeah.
So you had all of that on television in Mississippi. See, I had Memphis Wrestling. I had one show and got it on antenna there, on the antenna.
We at 12 noon, we had WTVA Channel 9 Wrestling. That was the syndicated show out of Memphis. A lot of that was like Coliseum action called by Lance Russell and so forth. They didn't really play up the angles, but they played up what was coming up the next Friday night in Tupelo. But we had that, and then like at 2:30 in the afternoon on WABG out of Greenwood, we had Mid-South, which later became UWF, you know, Bill Watts and that group. And then at 5, we had Georgia Championship Wrestling on WTBS. And then after that, about 10 o'clock at night, we had Continental or Southeastern come on Channel 4 out of Columbus. So, yeah, I was pretty eat up with it there on Saturdays. And that was the teenage and then into the 20s, you know. And then that's going into about the time I started doing the sheet there, about 22, 23 years old, I guess.
Did you go to live shows? Was there a lot of live shows in that area?
Yeah. Once I got a driver's license at 15, I started sneaking out, leaving, driving about 100 miles away to go to Jackson to the shows there. And then every once in a while, I would sneak up. I snuck off to go see Coco Ware and Ric Flair in 1985. I was 21, but I was still sneaking off because, you know, nobody else was really going with me. I was sneaking off to go to wherever I could find some wrestling at, whether it was DeKalb, Mississippi for Continental, or whether it was, like I said, down to the big shows in Jackson, and then wherever I could find them. I'd watch the shows and they'd say, oh, we're going to be here and there, and I'd go to the little spot shows and help them set the rings up and stuff. I mean, I just loved everything about wrestling. It was just theater with sports. I mean, what the hell could you ask for? I mean, you know, it was everything. And these guys were larger than life. They were my heroes. And many of them later on, like Bob Kelly, Tommy Gilbert, Eddie Gilbert, Brickhouse Bound, Porkchop Cash, I became friends with so many of them later, you know, over in the day. But anyhow, yeah, that's how I got started. And as far as Ringside Reflector, where you want me to start at, man?
Well, the funny thing about it, you're talking about something I mentioned. It's when we watched these guys and everybody played in the playgrounds. They wanted to be Jerry Lawler, Bill Dundee, not superheroes most of the time. And being friends with them is kind of, you know, you're kind of shell-shocked at first. I did the same thing. I know some of the biggest names by their first name, you know, but they know who I am and things like that. And it's just weird. It's one of those things that's, I compared it to, you know, us watching Gilligan's Island, and then Gilligan decided he was coming to our house every, you know, and hanging out.
No, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember when I had Tom Pritchard and Wendell Cooley come out to the house. This was during the Reflector years. And they came out, and Dunn the Stomper Harris, because, I mean, a lot of people may not realize who Dunn the Stomper Harris is. And, you know, Lou Fabiano, like I said, Wendell Cooley, Tom Pritchard, they all come out to the house for a steak dinner. I mean, you're right. Like, oh, this is cool. And then going to Pizza Hut with, like, Adrian Street and Miss Linda, and you're just freaking out because you're there at Pizza Hut with Adrian Street and Linda. And of course, they're not in their garb exactly, so a lot of people don't even recognize who they are. But it's just it's a surrealist. I mean, it's just like, I can't believe this is happening.
And, yeah. I remember the first time, you know, The Undertaker's on television. I was like, damn, you know, just so many months ago, he was at my apartment eating we shared a large pizza. So that's kind of the weirdness that you have, especially if you're around the business. But the South had everyone come through it. So we had all the stars go to, you know, go to the big time because Vince invaded there. But, yeah, let's get to the Ringside Reflector. You, number one, what? You know, we had a lot of sheets back then, and there was Meltzer was always the top one, and still is, in my opinion. But we had a Wrestling Forum. I don't know if it was going at the same time, but we had Wrestling Forum. We had Wrestling Right, which was mine. We had Chokehold. I talked to Jeff Zinger. He had Gag, and that was more like a personal zine thing that he sent to people. Steve Beverly was on talking about Matt Watch for a couple of shows. What else? Am I missing some?
Wade Taylor and the Torch.
That's
course.
Right. You're right. That's right.
And I don't know if you want to bring up Harvey Cobb and Pro Wrestling Examiner, but yeah, there was, gosh, it was probably at least two dozen of us out there, it seemed like. And some were, I'd say, a little more legit than others. Reflector started as Pro Wrestling Digest. And my vision for it was to have people who didn't feel like they were having a voice in the other sheets, if that makes sense. Because if you started looking around, everybody seemed to be in the letters pages. It was usually a lot of times in the Observer, it was the same guys over right. and over, even though I was one of those guys. I was like, you know, it's not fair. I know there's guys that got more opinions to this and da, da, da. And that's how it really started with Pro Wrestling Digest. And after about, I think it was five, maybe six issues in, and we ran for 35 issues, actually. But about six issues in, I get a cease and desist order from Dennis Brent for using okay. the name Pro Wrestling Digest because he's got NWA Pro Wrestling Digest out of Dallas. And, of course, he's a little bigger, more powerful person than I was. So we became Ringside Reflector. We just changed the name real quick. Like, and I say we, that was myself, Bob Ivey, Jeff Steele, and Steve Bryant, really. Steve was our photographer guy. And, of course, Jeff Steele had a little history in the business at the time. He had been Lord Richard Phillips III in the Indies around Mississippi. And, of course, Bob's a lifelong friend from elementary school. So, I mean, we had this all, of course, my wife at the time, Marlene. So it was a group effort, and we got together and decided we'd just do a little different kind of thing, or at least what we thought was different, and we'd allow people to write opinionated pieces more than just sending results in and so forth. We encourage people to voice their opinion on things, which I guess is kind of what John Gallagher did in Forum as well to an extent. But now that's where Ring Fun Reflector came from. I mean, and I tried to make a cover and put a photo on the front and all kinds. I tried to be a little more innovative than Dave was with Observer. Nothing against Dave. I'm just saying I tried to make it stand apart. You know what I'm saying?
Right, I had to. Yeah, we had to compete. Someone had sent me a picture on Facebook yesterday of like four or five of my issues of Riot, and you know, I was the fourth of a page tiny newsletter, but I had to be different. And that's the way I do with this. I mean, everyone's doing 4 or 5 hour podcasts, and I do 30 minutes, and I think that's you had to be different. And Reflector was different. It was a discussion thing where a lot of people wrote articles, and then it was kind of like, and I didn't know this until later on when I started getting other newsletters, and you know, for things like sci-fi was a lot like the Reflector, where an issue would come out and a bunch of people would write about that issue, send letters in to about that, and then you would get a new issue along with all the responses from what happened in your last issue. And if you had a controversy or something, or if someone was giving you hell, then we found out that, you know, in the next issue what was going on. But Me and you were friends.
Yeah, that was easy source material too. That give you a lot of material to work with that you didn't have to drum up a lot of your own mind. Oh, hey, look, I got this from this guy. I can run this. And I can remember guys like Phantom of the Ring, Ed Gurria wrote some things. He wrote for everybody, though.
Right, right.
And he wrote great stuff. And, of course, like I said, Brother Jeff wrote really good stuff. I can remember him saying, 40 years from now, Ricky and Robert are going to be still wrestling, and the R's are going to be fell off of their things, and they're going to be the Ockin' Old Express. And you know what? He was right. It's been 40 years, and they're still wrestling.
They are, and that's you're right. That's
yeah,
exactly.
I'm like, really? How did Jeff know this stuff? So, you know, but, yeah, we had a lot of good guys. John Lankin, I remember John did the thing with the food. He did food reports from the arenas, if you remember that.
I do.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of folks, I can't think of a lot of my off the top of my head, but and then the network we created, and we had at the time, at the highest point, I think we had about 190 subscribers. And the most amazing thing was, like you said, Brian Pillman. I remember Brian Tillman sitting in and getting the subscription.
Right.
Of course, there was Eddie and Gilbert and Missy Knight, Jim Ross. These names, you know, Paul Heyman.
That's what I was going to say. I wish I would have kept the checks for Cornette and Heyman, because that was my two. That was the two subscribers that I was like, "Hey, this is awesome." You know, they weren't. Cornette was a fairly big name at the time, and Heyman was going to be, and he was already started. But yeah, those two guys supported the and Eddie too, as you mentioned though. But Heyman and Cornette were sponsors or helpers or supported or whatever you want to call the sheets way back when. I mean, Cornette sent me. You know, I sent out some free ones, don't get me wrong, because, you know, my gimmick was I was selling, giving away wrestling tapes. Yeah, for donations. I wasn't selling anything. Yeah, that's it. So that
right.
was my main gimmick. But, you know, Cornette made sure that he didn't miss an issue, and Paul did the same thing. They both sent in money.
It's funny. I don't remember anyone ever asking for, like, free ones. The main free ones went out to, I'd say, in exchange for, like, your sheet. You know, we exchanged. I did that with just about everybody out there. We just exchanged sheets. But I remember getting the check from Jim Ross, getting the check from Eddie Gilbert, getting the check from Jim Cornette. I mean, these guys paid for it. They didn't ask for it free of charge or anything. They actually supported us, but you know, financially by actually paying for their subscriptions. And that was incredible to me. I was like, you know, you don't really have to pay for these. I'd probably send them to you because look who you are. But they didn't. They didn't ask for nothing free of charge. It was, you know, and like you said, that supported us big time.
Yeah, I remember I would take the Observer with me into the Memphis dressing room, and there would be, you know, two or three guys that would grab the Observer and read it while I was there, and I would leave with it. And I remember Ken Wayne saying something. He had read some of it, and Ken told me, he said, tell Meltzer to send me copies, you know. And it kind of made me, when I said that, so Dave always called me on Sundays for the Memphis News. And so I said, well, Ken Wayne said, why not send him? And I've got his address. And Dave says, tell Ken Wayne to send me some money and I'll send him the issues. And I was like, hey, that's right. You know, we are actually putting a product out. And
yeah, I mean, like, with all the boys in the business, who are reading the sheets and reading the Observer, especially, if Dave tried to send everybody a free copy, he'd been going belly up early on, so that wasn't happening.
No, it wasn't. Just thought it was, you know, it gave me an idea, perspective. He was doing a business. I was doing a business, but it had something to do with videotapes.
I'm going to give you a little kudos there, brother. I don't think I'd ever walk in the dressing room with the Observer. I never did that. Now, how I did meet Eddie with the whole thing was I did take him a copy of mine, the Reflector, down to Meridian one night, and he's doing the Golden Challenge thing against, like, Jerry Stubbs and Willie B. Hurt and stuff. And I met him outside and said, look, I'm doing this sheet. And, you know, he's like, oh, this is good. And that's when, you know, basically I'd met him a couple of times before, but hadn't really told him about the sheet and everything. This is like the summer before the thing in Memphis, the UAWF convention, when we all – This was like probably May before October, and so our friendship was just really kicking off when we all got together in Memphis, and I mean, and it lasted the rest of his life, you know. So you know, I'm very proud of that association, But anyhow, I don't know what to tell you. The reflector basically went, I can't, how it ended.
Okay, well, before we do all that, let me go to commercial. We'll let them pay for it, the commercial guys, and we'll come back and talk about the ending.
'80s Tees is the leading online retailer of officially licensed t-shirts, specializing in retro movie, music, TV show, video games, comic book, and cartoon t-shirts. '80s Tees has you covered. They have everything from G.I. Joe, Seinfeld, and Back to the Future, as well as 152 different classic wrestling shirts. Plus, free shipping on all orders over $50. Visit them now at our link, tinyurl.com/STS80sTees. That's tinyurl.com/STS80sTees. Visiting them at our link will cost you nothing extra, but it will help support this podcast. Now, back to the show.
All right, we're back with JD. Okay. JD, the one thing that that I want to talk about that I found fascinating, because my newsletter was I got to where I think the most I ever got out was 300 issues. Like I said, mine wasn't all of them weren't paid for, my idea was if you ordered videotapes, and I'd send you one for free, and we traded. But I ended up around, I'd have a party to put all this. Cut them, help me, put it all together, help me staple it, and, just have pizza and something to drink, and there'd be three or four people come over and help me. What was the process of putting it together and shipping it out? Because you had to put it, type everything first.
Yeah, I did most of the typing. Unless something came to me already preformed, you know, some of the stuff the guys already typed up for me. I did most of it myself on a little old-fashioned old typewriter, basically. And, of course, Molly Ann helped some. And Bob did his part. Of course, Jeff wrote out his stuff. But what was funny was Jeff found us the printers in Jackson, which was like 100 miles away from where I lived. And what we'd have to do is go down and take them or mail them the issue, and they would print it off. It was Fairies Printers on on Terry Road in South Jackson. Anyway, we go down after the day, we call us and tell us when we got the issues ready. Now they correlated basically and everything, got everything together for us. Now I had to come back, and because of the thickness, we usually ran, you know, like 10 pages back and front, so it was like 20 pages. We would take them and fold them and staple them back together again until folded, and put the name on the outside and put the postage on it and everything. I mean, it took a while. And like I said, the most we ever had, I think, was right at 185, 190 subscribers or, you know, readers, or however you want to look at it. We usually averaged, over the 3 years, we probably averaged about 150.
All right. That's still good. So, though. I barely remember, but I think I'm going to remember this correctly, and there'll be someone out there that has one of my sheets. But I think all I charged, or only charged, 75 cents. And you could, what it was I wanted you to get four issues for $3. Like I said, sent out a lot of free ones, but I think that was what the subscribers actually paid for mine. What did you pay for Ringside Reflector?
Right. The subscribers would pay $2 issue. I think I was given breaks. If you got six issues, it was $10 or something like that. You know, you give you a break if you bought multiples. That was to create a little more revenue flow. And I misunderstood your question earlier, but anyway, it was $2 an issue, and we were basically just increments of 6 or 12 issues if somebody wanted to go ahead and buy up. Of course, we was trying to do it monthly, and it just kind of went from there. That you could buy up as many as you wanted to, and then, you know, I'll give you a break off of them, but it was $2 an issue. And I think my cost in it was like $1.71 or something. So I was making 29 cents profit. Yeah, right.
For all that. Now, what? So I want to know the guys that helped you out. And what happened to the people that were, where are they now kind of thing? Because I know people think of that. We're going to talk about the end. Let's talk about the end first, and then we'll go to where are they now kind of thing. What brought us to, we did, you said 35 issues, which was right at 3 years of producing it. What made you decide, hey, it's time to quit doing this?
You know, honestly, I can't remember. I think it was just it wasn't boredom so much. It was just tired. I mean, it was just a grind to keep doing it. Maybe a little loss of interest in the biz because things seemed to be changing. Of course, this was 88, 89, 90, 91. I think it was like 91 was our last year to start doing it. And you could feel a difference in where the business was going. Vince was taking over, and it was just about everywhere you look, it was just all WWE. There wasn't a whole lot of anything else. It didn't seem like the territory was trying to, you know, just like I said, it wasn't so much a loss of interest as a disillusionment with where the business has headed. And I saw this monopoly taking over, and it was just not as much to talk about. And, but he just kind of drowned out on me. And the more I got involved in the business, helping promote shows, and then in August of 91, I actually stepped in the ring and got into actually wrestling a little bit.
Did you? Now, who did you wrestle on your first show?
Oh, man. He was one of the biggest, baddest MFers I've ever met in my life. Some kid by the name of BT Express.
Oh, hey, and, I want to tell this.
He was in a mask, and I had no idea who he was.
I mean, he wore this really sharp-looking machine-looking
mask like Andre had. And it may have been Andre. I'm not sure.
It could have been Andre.
Big John Studd.
One of my favorite stories, and you can always tell who you're talking to when I say, you was holding me naked in the shower. And you will know exactly who, if I text you and you don't know where the number's coming from, you'll know exactly what man you was holding in the shower. This is funny right now, but
no, man, there's been many of those. I hope you don't think you're special.
I was taking a shower.
Okay, I just ruined everything I've ever done.
Well, we're out of here. That's the end of it. I was taking a shower before the match.
You know, you and I did the thing in here in my hometown, and things kind of I'm still doing a little wrestling. Actually, I'm supposed to be booked this weekend, but anyway, 27 years later, oh my gosh, 27 years. Oh, but anyway, and also got told by some of the guys in the business, if you're going to be in the business, you really can't be doing the sheet, you know.
Right,
and I'm like,
right.
Okay, you can't do the sheet and be in the business. And I started looking around, and guys like Meltzer, Gallagher, you know, now you and I are a little exceptions to the rule because you did the Coach BT thing and everything. We kind of transitioned into it. But a lot of guys never actually stepped into the ring, never done anything more than just watched it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's not a slide on them or anything.
No. But that's
what happened.
The point
is, you can't walk both sides of that fence too easily. You just really can't.
No. So. There's no way I could have done and I found out the hard way too. And one of the reasons I wrestled was, you know, got people were telling us we couldn't wrestle because we did a sheet or blah blah blah. But it did. You couldn't actually do that and be, especially when it was a little bit more closed down than it is now. I want to tell the story real quick. So everyone knows why we're in the shower together. But I'm taking a shower at your house, getting ready for us to wrestle. I fall in the shower, and if it wasn't for you, I don't know if I'd ever got up. I'd still be laying down in there. You come in there, what the hell, you know, because you heard the noise, and save me and help me get me up. And I could barely walk. I could just barely fucking walk after that. And so we did the best match we could ever do, and especially when it came to me. I was supposed to actually wrestle my buddy or manage my buddy, Jack Hicks, who didn't make it. I got in the ring and challenged anyone. You being from that area, man, it was just a huge pop. You know, you came down, you accepted the challenge and beat me like in 4 seconds. And that, I mean, we got a huge pop for that. And I remember Doug Gilbert saying that was perfect. you know, because that's what we had planned to, we planned to do it that way and make it, put you over. And I think you ended up wrestling again that night, right?
Well, no, I ended up just getting the crap beat.
Oh, okay. All right. Remember, all right.
Rick Welch and Buddy Billy Rush. I think it was Billy Rush. I don't remember. Ron Perry. But anyway, those guys, the Zebra Kids. Yeah, it transitioned into the next match with the Zebra Kids. You're right. I did the Zebra Kid match with Ron Perry. That's right. I defeated you. They came in and attacked me. We went into the match with me and Ron. They didn't attack me, but Ron come out. And he got involved somehow, and then I wrestled him for a few minutes, and then the other heels came out and just basically beat me up and left me laying sympathy for the hometown babyface, and that's just where we left it.
So we quit the Observer, the Reflector. What are the guys, the people that helped you do it and put it out? You mentioned four of them. There's a bunch of other guys that helped that sent in stuff, but it was your ex-wife, and you did say your ex-wife, so we know what happened there. So
ex-wife number one, actually.
Oh yeah, well okay. So all what right, happened to Bob?
Bob Ivy.
Yeah.
Do what?
Yeah, go ahead. What happened to Bob?
The big Bob Ivy went on to he lives in Nashville now, and we still in touch with each other, still hollering at each other pretty much once or twice a week, actually. And he is a videographer, basically a sports videographer freelance. He goes around all these spring events in the Nashville area throughout like Tennessee and Kentucky, and he films everything from Titans football to Vanderbilt football to the Badgers hockey, and then he shoots freelance video, and then like he sells it off to like the local news cast and so forth, and puts together montages for the thing. It's a really lucrative deal, and he's done really well for himself. Steve Bryant is now Steve Bowtie Bryant, and he's a car salesman in North Carolina, I believe. Of course, he also did a lot of photos for like Wrestling High and Wrestling Fury. I got him. I mean, I'm the one who broke him in got his pictures published in, of course, in the Reflector. And then I know the kid is like getting his pictures taken and sending to people like Donny Lible and so forth with those sheets. I mean, those magazines. And he's all across the globe in magazines. Photo by Steve Bryant. I'm like, dude, how about that? And Jeff Steele, I don't know whatever happened to Jeff. Last I heard, he's like the biggest thing in Southern gospel music. You know, he did a song a few years back called We Want America Back that took everybody. Of course, this was a few years, probably about 15 years ago. He just took off like crazy. And him and Sister Sherry and their son Brad, and they're still singing, and he is a pastor in Cullman, Alabama, at the Grace Baptist Church in Cullman, as well as still traveling the roads, singing gospel music. So there you go. That was the four of us, really.
Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. All right. Hey, I want to thank you, JD, for coming on. My old buddy, JD McKay, we're talking about Ringside Reflector. I want to thank you, the listeners, the people downloading. We thank our sponsors. And join us next week, same bat time, same bat channel, on the best little wrestling podcast in the business. Live my mama. Be there. Thank you, sir.
All right, man.